feels like Britain out there today.
It really does. All we need is fog. And our friend Charles C.W. Cook from National Review will feel right at home. Charles, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
We're great. Thanks for taking time to be on the show with us.
Of course.
Well, man, you've been writing some outstanding stuff over at nationalreview.com on, a whole bunch of topics, but specifically the Obamacare rollout, which we've been following closely here on the show as well. It's been a disaster on a whole number of levels, a wreck, as you say in the headline of one of your most recent pieces. But as we've chronicled through these, I guess you could say years by this point, the number of broken promises, the number plain promises that were made to Americans just keeps getting broken. They keep getting broken right and left as we learn more, as Nancy Pelosi said.
Well, they do, and it's not as if the promises were made in any vague sense or they were made off the record. They were made over and over and over and over again, and I quote the New York Times with that. They said over and over and over and over again by the president, not just during his campaign, but also while he was president, while the law was being passed, and as recently as last summer. And the promises were fairly clear. For a start, a family's average premiums would go down by $2,500. Now, we now know that that was a total nonsense number that was effectively drawn on the back of an envelope, but it was still a promise. The biggest promise of all, of course, was that nobody's premiums would go up. That's not that some people's premiums would go up and some would go down. It's that nobody's premiums would go up at all. In fact, the president said, and he punctuated these speeches with phrases like, period, let me be clear, and end of story, that if you had private insurance already, whether through your employer or not, you wouldn't have to worry because this didn't affect you at all. That's another promise. He said that you wouldn't lose it and you wouldn't have your relationship with your doctor affected. Well, none of these things are coming true. And it's my view that the president and the other cheerleaders of Obamacare need to be nailed to the wall for knowingly lying to the American public.
And instead, Charles, what they're doing is moving the goalposts, saying, well, you know, if we didn't do this, healthcare premiums would be even higher. Or, we always said there's going to be some winners and some losers in the process when, I know you pointed out too, explicitly previously it was said, there will be no losers. We're all winners under the new Obamacare system.
Right, and the latter point is the important one because conservatives and critics of the law looked at it when it was a bill and said, well, of course there is no way that you can start enrolling people who have pre-existing conditions and ensure that everybody's premiums go down. This is, of course, what we're seeing. And the left is now making that argument in defense of Obamacare, which is bizarre. You know, Jonathan Cohn at The New Republic, Ezra Klein at Wonk Blog, The Washington Post, and Jonathan Chait at The New Yorker have all written and said, well, of course, everybody's premiums aren't going to go down. Of course there will be winners and losers because of the way the law is structured. Well, absolutely, that's exactly what critics said, and it's what the president and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and everybody else who defended this law denied flatly for years. That's not just a changing of the goalpost. That's basically using the original criticisms to sell the law. It's bizarre world.
Yeah, that's a really great way of looking at it. And, you know, if any of these things were done by a private company, we would be looking at, a whole passel of executives being fired, being marched out the door, other people coming in, or a company just folding up. But here it's just business as usual.
Well, and that's the way that government works, because accountability has basically gone out the window. And government can borrow more money and tax more money and use force to get what it wants. The fraud rate for Medicare, just the amount of money that is spent fraudulently, not the rest of it, is 7 times Walmart's annual profit. Now, no private company would get away with that because they'd go out of business. So where does that money come from? Well, it comes from us. They just take it, and if we don't pay it, they put us in prison. And that's how Obamacare works as well. So really the only solution here is for people to get angry enough, and I hope that they will, at the premium rises and cuts in care and changes to their relationship with their doctor and with their insurance company that they're seeing, and to vote in people who will undo this mess. There's no way that the government's going to fix it.
Charles C. W. Cook with us from National Review, nationalreview.com, to find his archive of recent work. Just yesterday, in fact, headline on your piece, the Obamacare rollout is a blow to single-payer hopes. Now, some people thought this is the strategy all along. You get people into the Obamacare and onto the federal exchanges, and eventually, things don't work great, and so people say, well, we can't trust the private sector at all. We've got to shove it all onto government. You know, let's go single payer. But this rollout's been so atrocious, you do wonder if doubts are starting to get even into the true believers' heads.
Well, I think I should probably clarify what I mean by that, because it very much depends how the system fails. Suppose that on October 1st, the healthcare.gov website and the various satellite state websites had been launched and they'd been a perfect success, and the technical side of Obamacare had gone perfectly, but that in a few years, the insurance companies were saying this is just unsustainable, premiums were going through the roof, and so on and so forth. I think that you'd have a chorus from the left saying we need single payer. Now, of course, they wanted single payer anyway, and I don't think it's a silly argument to make that this was supposed to lead to it. But I don't know how successful that would be. But that is its own argument. Where the rollout has been difficult for people who ultimately want single payer is that it's shown that government can't run anything. In other words, advocates will now be able to say, you know, there's no way we're allowing you to run the entire healthcare system when you can't even run a website. in the sense that the Obamacare rollout has been a technical failure, we don't yet know what's going to happen to insurance. We don't know how many people are going to sign up. We don't know what's going to happen overall to health spending in the next 5 or 10 years. But in the sense that it's been a technical failure, that has to be really disastrous for people who want the government to get more involved, because nobody is going to want the payment system for American healthcare to be in the hands of people who literally can't run a single web page.
No, and given seemingly unlimited funds to get that website up and going, and we were told the best and brightest minds of people who worked on the campaign would be doing this.
Well, and that's what they always say. I mean, I think this is where one can get a little bit more philosophical and say that this really does come down to the difference between the way in which conservatives and libertarians and classical liberals see the world and in which progressives see the world. Because progressives honestly believe, and they have done since the time of Woodrow Wilson and that odd period in Anglo-American history when the people who invented human freedom fell in love with Germany and the Bismarckian way of seeing everything, they started to argue that if you could just put public administration in the hands of the best and brightest, then the countries would work really well. And that, unfortunately, for the people who have had to suffer through attempts at it, is total nonsense. And this is another great example. There was a piece in The Atlantic about the Obamacare website from June that is incredibly embarrassing reading. I've quoted it at length on the corner. And the Health and Human Services IT department is effectively saying this is just so great, because what we're seeing with the Obamacare website is what happens when you put the best and brightest in charge of a project. Well, actually, yes, we are. That's exactly what we're seeing now, but not in the way that they intended.
Charles C. W. Cook with us. Follow on Twitter, too, at Charles C. W. Cook.
I would argue he is the most interesting person on Twitter.
Yeah.
I would make that argument. I've got nothing to back it up, but I enjoy reading his stuff more than anybody else.
And, you know, when we started talking to him, we only had, I think, around 2,000 Twitter followers. If you look now, I think he's at 15,000. So I'm not saying that's the reason why, the increase in Twitter.
I bet he's not saying that either.
Charles, we should point out we're talking to noted Rhino Squish, Charles W. Cook. That's what he's being called. That's what he's being called on Twitter these days, Charles. The strategy, tactic. David Fredosa was also very early on, and you two on the tactics, the defund tactics, critical and saying this is how it's going to end. And now that it's ended virtually the way that you predicted, you're being called out on Twitter by those who don't even know who you are. So Let's kind of put that in the past a bit. And as you mentioned, the way to change this is to convince people, to get people angry. What's the path forward? You brought the Harry and Louise commercials back yesterday at the corner, and watching those, you're right, the same arguments. This is now a time in the future, which they reference in those spots back during the Hillary care debate. All those things they're talking about, it's happening right now.
Absolutely. I'm generally something of a pessimist, as you know, and I think that civilization is imminently about to collapse, but I think this is a fairly good year for conservatives, or at least I think it can be if they play it right. For a start, Obamacare's rollout has been a disaster, and people have noticed. It's not just coverage in the national newspapers, but up and down the country in local newspapers, there's been some really brutal discussion of what it's doing to people. So much so that I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that the president, having fought tooth and nail to keep Obamacare funded and on time, is going to have to illegally delay it once again. I also think if you look at the spending fight next year, Republicans are clever. They'll just pass a clean debt ceiling increase and a clean continuing resolution, and then they will dare Harry Reid to try and increase spending just before an election.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll also say, look, sequestration is the law, as they did with Obamacare. You can't attach this to the debt ceiling or to a continuing resolution. They'll play their own game. And then coming into 2014, if you look at the Senate, not only will there probably be the tailwinds of this Obamacare disaster, but it is just a generally good-looking year for Republicans. Nate Silver says it's likely to be a toss-up. And the numbers in the Senate seats that are up for grabs, even after the shutdown, still look very good. Republicans have about a 10-point party advantage in four of the states, and the actual races are within 5 points. So I think, if conservatives play it right and they just focus on the Obamacare mess in a good year for them, it could actually be quite a good 12 months. What we don't want to do is to jump, up and down and wave our hands and fly over the top into machine gun fire so that we can say that we tried something when we... absent a strategy. And I'm afraid I agree with absolutely everything that Tea Party Republicans were trying to achieve in the last 16, 17 days. I just don't think they ever had a chance of achieving what they wanted. We need to be clever about this.
Charles C.W. Cook, National Review, nationalreview.com. I think charlescwcook.com also will work to find a whole bunch of his stuff, too. Before we let you go, Charles, time is running out, based on reports. Are we going to see the motto, the debate between you and Piers Morgan before he's fired from CNN?
I don't think... he's funny with this, because he did respond to me once. He said he didn't know who I was, which was, I think, a fairly cheap shot. I mean, maybe he didn't, but I don't know how.
Yeah, CNN viewers say that about him.
Yeah, and he said to somebody the other day that he wouldn't debate them because he didn't debate anybody who had less than 12,000 followers. Well, I have 15,000 followers on Twitter, so maybe I qualify. I can't see it happening.
Oh, man. Let me know, because if it goes pay-per-view, I swear to you, I will give my credit card. I would love to see the beatdown that you would lay out on him.
I'd love to talk to him, because, he's just written a book in which he discusses, and he does give off the impression of somebody who, to borrow a phrase from Christopher Hitchens, the impression of somebody who's actually never heard an argument other than his own.
Well, that would be well worth queuing up for. Charles, as always, we appreciate you taking time out of your day to be on with us.
Anytime.